Welcome to the deep dive. Today we are, well, I guess you could say we're putting on our racing helmet.
The fast lane, for sure.
Exactly. We're diving straight into the fast lane of decentralized finance. We're stepping away from the, you know, the modular stability of Ethereum L2s and locking onto some high performance chains, Solana, Sui, and Tron.
Right. And these networks, they're home to some huge money markets like Kamino, Soylent, and Justlend. And they've all made a very deliberate trade-off.
A trade-off? How so?
They've aggressively prioritized raw transaction speed, maximizing capital efficiency, and really just delivering a slick user experience.
And that's their edge against Ethereum, which is more focused on decentralization and composability.
Obviously.
And that trade-off is exactly why we're here today. Our mission is, I think, pretty clear. We need to quickly compare the innovations driving these protocols, but, and this is the important part, we have to dissect their unique network-specific risk profiles.
Yes.
Because speed is great, but fast money markets, they introduce failure points you just don't see on the slower, more established chains.
That's the key. If you are even thinking about deploying capital onto these chains, you absolutely have to understand what could break.
Whether it's a specific stablecoin failing or some hidden transaction cost.
Exactly. We need to identify those hidden landmines before anyone, you know, steps on them.
Okay, let's unpack this. I think we should start where the capital efficiency innovation is arguably the strongest. Kamino Finance on Solana.
Good place to start.
The core concept driving Kamino is something they call their hybrid primitive. What is that?
It's a really compelling idea because it solves a fundamental problem in DeFi. Traditionally, your capital has to pick a job.
Right. You're either an LP earning trading fees or you're a lender earning interest. It's one or the other.
Your capital is siloed. But Kamino's architecture, it's pretty ingenious. It integrates this vault layer that manages concentrated liquidity positions, CLMMs.
So it's keeping your funds in a really tight, efficient price range to capture fees.
Yes, and here's the secret sauce. The lending layer accepts the tokens from those vaults, the K tokens, as collateral.
Wait, hold on. So the K token represents my LP position, which is already earning fees. And then I can use that same token to borrow against it.
That's it. You're earning LP fees and borrowing or lending interest at the same time.
So my capital is doing two things at once.
Essentially, yeah. You've given your capital about 1.5 times the utility of a standard deposit. It's a very tight loop designed specifically for a high-speed chain like Solana.
And that efficiency powers their Multiply product, which is basically a one-click leverage engine. Now, that sounds fast, but also a little bit dangerous.
Well, it definitely increases volatility, but the Multiply product handles all the complex steps automatically. The flash loan, the swap, the deposit, it's all one transaction.
So give me an example. How does that work in practice?
Take their Genosol Multiply Vault. A base staking yield of, say, 7% can get magnified up to around 13% or even higher with 3x leverage.
Okay, the gains are clear. But let's be realistic about the downside. What is the single most important risk metric a user needs to be watching like a hawk?
It is the negative net APY. That is your absolute danger zone.
And that's when?
Yeah.
When the borrow rate goes up.
It's when the borrow rate for the asset you took out spikes higher than the yield you're generating from staking or LPing.
Hmm.
Your leverage position is then actively bleeding money.
Every second. You're paying more to sustain the loop than the loop is making.
And that's where liquidations start.
Right. But this is actually where Kamino has a really interesting innovation on the risk side of things.
Mm.
Auto deleverage, or ADL. How does that change the game compared to, you know, the liquidations we're used to?
ADL is, well, it's like a sophisticated automated risk guardian. In traditional DeFi, if your position health drops too low, a liquidator just sweeps in, sells all your collateral at a big discount.
And you lose the whole position. It's a hard chop.
Precisely. It's binary. ADL is different. As the position approaches danger, ADL triggers a partial unwind.
Partial one?
Yes. It monitors the health factor and automatically sells just enough of the collateral to get the position back to a safe level.
So it minimizes the loss. You don't get totally wiped out.
Exactly. It's a huge psychological and financial safety net if you're using leverage.
Before we move on, we should probably touch on their V2 upgrade and the market factory model. This seems to be about letting anyone list any SPL token.
It is, and for anyone who doesn't know, an SPL token is just Solana's version of an ERC-20. The key here is risk isolation.
Meaning one market can't crash another?
That's it. By allowing permissionless creation of these isolated markets, Kamino can list anything, even super volatile meme coins, because the risk is completely contained within that one pool. It's just smart architecture for a fast-moving ecosystem.
That's a great breakdown of Kamino. Okay, let's pivot now from Solana's architecture to Sui's foundational security with Silent. This was built by the Sullen team, but it's on totally different language. Move.
And this is a really crucial technical distinction. It addresses security right at the code level. See, traditional blockchain languages, they treat tokens as basically entries on a ledger.
Just mutable data that can be changed.
Right. Move, on the other hand, treats tokens as secure objects.
Okay, what's the practical difference for me as a user between a ledger entry and a secure object?
The security model is vastly different. Move has built-in security for asset transfers. It helps prevent a lot of common smart contract bugs like re-entrancy because it defines ownership so clearly at the object level. They literally bill it as an asset-safe language.
So in theory, it should be safer to build on.
That's the idea. Less error-prone.
But as we know, the biggest risks in cross-chain DeFi often aren't in the protocol code itself, it's the operational side. Let's talk bridging and canonical assets, because this is where people moving to Sui can really trip up.
This is absolutely critical for anyone listening. When you move assets to Sui, you have to use a designated bridge, like the Sui Bridge or Portal, which is powered by Wormhole. But just getting your assets there isn't enough.
What's the next step?
You have to verify that the asset you're about to deposit into Cyland is the canonical asset.
Why is that so important? I mean, if I send USDC over, it's USDC, right?
Yep.
Whether it's wrapped or native.
That is a very dangerous assumption. Think of it like this. Native Circle-issued USDC is the official dollar. A wrapped version, say WUSDC, is more like an IOU from the bridge operator.
I see.
So if you deposit the wrong one, the non-canonical wrapped one, you face two immediate dangers: fragmented liquidity and massive DPEG risk.
Fragmented liquidity.
Yeah.
That means the market depth is split between the two versions, making big swaps riskier.
Exactly. And the DPEG risk is even simpler. If the bridge that created your WUSDC gets hacked or fails, the WUSDC you're holding could instantly become worthless.
Triggering liquidations in the pool.
It's a cascade. So you absolutely must check Cylon's official docs to make sure you're only depositing the real deal: SUI, native USDC, or native USDT.
And we have to talk about the security incident from May 2025, a $10 million exploit. What did that teach us about Cylon's risk model?
Well, that incident was a very stark reminder about risk compartmentalization. The exploit specifically targeted the isolated asset pools.
The smaller, more experimental markets.
Right. The main pools, the ones holding the core canonical assets like SUI and the verified stablecoins, they remain completely safe, unaffected.
So the lesson here for you, the listener, is pretty clear. When you're exploring these new high-performance chains, play it safe. Stick to the deep, battle-tested assets.
Absolutely. The main pool assets are vetted. The isolated pools are, for all intents and purposes, experiments. Until the ecosystem is much more mature, I'd minimize any exposure outside of those primary markets.
That is some solid advice.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move to our third target. Just lend on Tron. Now, we're talking about sheer scale here. This is a massive financial engine.
It really is. The total value locked, or TVL, often surpasses $6 to $8 billion. It's one of the largest decentralized lending markets in the world.
It comes with a central, non-negotiable risk factor.
And we have to put all our attention on this, the USDD factor. USDD is the core stablecoin of the Tron ecosystem. It's an algorithmic stablecoin.
So it relies on mint and burn mechanisms, plus some reserves, to hold its peg.
Correct. It claims to be over-collateralized, but the reality of its composition and governance, well, that has led to some pretty devastating professional ratings.
Devastating is right. It holds an F rating, as in failing from major blue-chip stablecoin rating agencies.
And that's not a small concern. It points to really serious, opaque issues with its governance and, most importantly, the actual verifiable composition of the reserves backing the coin. Transparency is a massive problem.
So when users go to JustLend and see these wild APYs, 10%, 20%, sometimes even 30% for mining rewards, they're not seeing real yield. They're walking into what we call the yield trap.
That is exactly what it is. That sky-high APY isn't market interest. It is a risk premium.
A risk premium.
The protocol is literally paying you 10, 20, 30% to take on the very high risk that USDD will suffer a severe, maybe even permanent DPEG. It is compensation for taking on systemic risk.
The warning here needs to be explicit then. Avoid significant holdings in USDD, and more importantly, do not use it as collateral. Why is using it as collateral the ultimate danger?
Yeah, because the whole system is so interconnected. If USDD, which is highly centralized and not transparent, were to have a major crisis and drop to, say, 80 cents, every single lending position using USDD as collateral would be in trouble. It could trigger a massive cascading liquidation spiral across the entire $8 billion protocol.
Affecting everyone, even users who thought they were safe in other assets.
Everyone.
And beyond the stablecoin danger, Tron also has this unique and often expensive surprise for beginners with transaction fees. It's not gas, it's this energy and bandwidth model.
Yes, and this is a system-specific cost you have to understand before you use it. To execute smart contracts on Tron, you need energy. If you're a casual user, you probably haven't staked or frozen your native TRX token to generate that energy.
And what happens if you haven't?
The network just burns a substantial amount of TRX right out of your wallet to pay for it. A single interaction, like a deposit on JustLend, can cost between 10 to 20 TRX.
Which is what, $2 to $4 right now?
Something like that. So you think you're getting a fast transaction, and then you realize your wallet is draining way faster than you'd expect on other chains. If you're going to use Tron, you have to manage your energy by staking TRX.
That is a fascinating and, frankly, complex array of risks. Okay, let's zoom out and try to synthesize this. We've looked at three very different protocols. What are the common overarching risks when moving assets between any of these high-performance chains?
The overarching danger is always the cross-chain movement itself. It boils down to bridge risks.
Bridge hacks, asset wrapping confusion.
Right, and the liquidity fragmentation we talked about, the best practice is just absolute paranoia. Only use the official canonical bridge recommended by the destination protocol, and never, ever send a large amount until you've done a small test transaction first.
You've mentioned canonical asset verification a few times now. It sounds like if a listener masters one concept today, this is the one.
Yes. If you are new to Sui or Solana or any of these chains, this step is non-negotiable. You must confirm that the asset in your wallet is the one the protocol actually accepts.
So if Cylon's docs say native USDC,
you cannot use a wormhole wrap WUSDC and expect it to be safe. You are inviting DPEG risk. It's that one moment of friction, but it's the most critical security barrier you can put up for yourself.
Okay. Let's build a final selection framework. If someone listening is trying to match their goal to one of these three networks, what's the core comparison?
I think we can break it down by the best use case. First, Kamino on Solana. That's your best bet if you prioritize capital efficiency, if you want to use leverage with their Multiply product, or if you value the safety of auto deleverage. It's for speed and capital utility.
Got it. And Silent.
Silent on Sui is the choice if you're working with Move Native assets and you want language's security benefits. But, and this is a big but, you have to commit to sticking strictly to the main pools. SUI, USDC, USDT. Avoid the experimental stuff.
And finally, JustLend on Tron.
JustLend is only justifiable if you are already deep in the Tron ecosystem and you have a risk model that fully accepts the huge systemic risk from USDD. For most people, the risk premium just isn't worth the danger.
What about the beginner who's excited by all this speed and wants to jump in?
The consensus advice from the material we looked at is restraint. If you're still mastering DeFi, start conservatively. Use the established Ethereum L2s, like Aavov on Arbitrum or Optimism.
They're more familiar, more robust liquidity.
Exactly. Only explore these alternative chains once you're really comfortable navigating network-specific risks, managing different fee models, and being paranoid about canonical assets.
That brings us to our final takeaways. We covered some highly technical ground, but I think there are three key nuggets that should stick with you.
I'd say first, the Kamino auto deleverage system. It's a genuine innovation that makes leverage inherently safer than old school liquidation models. Understand that.
Okay, number two.
Second, the single point of failure is usually human error. You have to verify and use only canonical assets on new chains like Sui. That's how you avoid fragmentation and DPEG risk.
And third, JustLend's USDD.
It's a flashing red light. Those high APYs are a warning signal, not a guarantee of returns.
These chains demand you learn new rules. Before you deploy anything, master their specific models, like how Tron's energy can drain your wallet, and always, always stick to the main liquid pools.
Which brings up a really important question for you, the listener, to use as a filter for everything else you see in DeFi. We learned that JustLend pays 10 to 30% APY as a risk premium for taking on the danger of an F-rated stablecoin.
Right.
So if you see extraordinarily high, seemingly unsustainable yields anywhere else, a new L2 farm, a new stablecoin product, ask yourself, What hidden systemic risk are you unknowingly being paid to assume?
Use that USDD yield trap as a mental model to assess risk versus reward everywhere.
Exactly.
That powerful risk filter is the most valuable asset you can walk away with today. Verify your assets, internalize the risk premium concept, and start small. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the fast lane of DeFi.
Thanks for having me.
We'll catch you next time.